This is How Success Happens, where the staff of Entrepreneur chats with innovators, writers, artists, chefs, and a range of other unique personalities to better understand the traits that make excellence possible.
Nobody in Silicon Valley thinks it's actually them. They think everybody else is like this.
One of my regrets actually now, we should have pulled the plug sooner.
It's amazing when the universe sees you commit, how all of a sudden all these resources start to come together.
Thanks for joining us. And now, How Success Happens.
Welcome to How Success Happens. I'm Nina Zipkin, staff writer at Entrepreneur.com. Today, my guest is Barbara Corcoran. Corcoran is now known as a real estate mogul and one of the most recognizable investors on the Emmy Award-winning series Shark Tank. But when she started what would become the Corcoran Group, she had just left her job as a waitress and had a $1,000 loan in her pocket. Over her 25 years in business, Corcoran grew that loan into a real estate empire worth $5 billion. As an investor on Shark Tank, she has backed over 80 companies. She's also a best-selling author and the host of the podcast, Business Unusual with Barbara Corcoran. We'll hear more from Corcoran about the biggest lessons she's learned, but first, a word from our sponsors. Zola takes the stress out of wedding planning with free wedding websites, your dream wedding registry, affordable save-the-dates and invitations, and easy-to-use planning tools. Start with a free wedding website. It's so easy and takes just minutes to set up. Add photos, stories about how you two met, travel and accommodations info, and even recommend things to do for your guests while they're in town for your wedding. You can also create a fund for your honeymoon, future home, new puppy, anything you want. To start your free wedding website and also get $50 off your registry on Zola, go to zola.com/HSH. Again, that's Zola, ZOLA.com/HSH. And now for our second sponsor. Fundrise is the future of real estate investing. Fundrise enables you to instantly access high-quality, high-potential private market real estate projects from high-rises in D.C. to multifamily apartments in L.A. Each real estate project is carefully vetted and actively managed by Fundrise's team of real estate pros. The platform's innovations power an investor-first model by eliminating the bloated costs and middlemen that have traditionally weighed down real estate investing, saving investors time and money. Fundrise's unparalleled transparency and real-time reporting let you see how the development of specific properties impact your overall portfolio. Visit fundrise.com/HSH. That's FUNDRISE.com/HSH to have your first 3 months of fees waived. Again, that's fundrise.com/HSH. Okay, so first question for you, can you talk a little bit about the partnership with Amex and Amazon, and why was this a project that you wanted to work on together?
The basis of it is that I very much believed in it. I think the Amazon Business American Express card solves a lot of problems for businesses, so I looked at the details. And, you know, I'm sure you know I've built a business from scratch, but more importantly, I've worked, I've worked with so many entrepreneurs from Shark Tank. And I can tell you the two big tripwires are always cash flow and working capital. They're always, they might have the best plans, they might be the best entrepreneurs, but that always trips them up. So I feel like I've wasted a lot of time myself building my business, not handling that well. And I think the new card, I think, addresses it perfectly. I think that one of them, for me, I mean, there are a lot of benefits, but for me personally that hit my chord was that the members could choose between the cash back or the interest-free payments. And believe me, when I needed interest-free payments or even even a loan or a credit line when I was a very young businesswoman, it was never there to be had. And so in this instance, it kind of takes the power of a big business, which I got when my business got big, but it gives it right into the hands of the small business when they really need it. And so I think that's, for me, the most important benefit, that you can choose between whether you want to get credit for what you're spending and who doesn't need extra money, or whether you want to have interest-free money to use to grow your business. So I think it's going to help people build business, and that's why I like it.
Like in the early go, was there a particular like kind of hard lesson you learned about money management?
Definitely, because I was a terrible money manager. I was terrible on two fronts. One, I never anticipated cash flow needs because I was an optimist from the top of my head to my toes, which is a great thing to have for an entrepreneur because they jump off a cliff without asking a lot of questions. And so I was one of those. But once I was in the air, and realized all the money I needed to have a good landing. It was like, mm-hmm. Oh, why did I think of that? And so I got a little better over time. But the crippling thing with all these small businesses is when you really need the money, you don't get the money because you don't deserve the money in the eyes of finance people.
Right.
And then when you don't need the money, when you're doing well, everyone's throwing money at you. And so for me, I went through probably two tough recessions until I realized I really had to anticipate. So I was slow to learn that. And mm-hmm. now I realize in working with all of my entrepreneurs, the young ones that are just, you know, in their first, sort of say, fifth year of business, none of them know it. And I could lecture to them and say, wait, slow down, how about this? But the truth is, they're just like me. They're jumping off the cliff and not asking the questions till they hit the floor, you know?
Yeah. And in the early go, was there someone in business that you modeled yourself after, or was it just sort of you finding kind of your own way as you went?
I actually feel like I had a huge advantage because I had two role models. One was mm-hmm. my mother, and she never worked, so I can't say in business. Mm-hmm. And I often think if she had worked and she was my competitor, she would have been a lot better than me.
Mm-hmm.
But my mom was a natural-born businesswoman. She could accomplish anything she put her mind to. She just happened to raise 10 kids. That was her goal. And so she was able to juggle us on a shoestring budget and raise us in a two-bedroom flat and almost do it as though there was nothing to it. Now I look back with, I have two kids in a many more bedroom flat, and I'm like, how did she possibly do it? But what I got from her, which I realized immediately even before I started my business, in every job I ever had, and I had so many of them because I worked since I was 11, I realized I learned a lot from her early on because what her great gifts were was organizational skill. She's a phenomenal organizer. We had like a boot camp in our house. Everything had a place, which is remarkable considering how many people live there.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the second thing I learned from her is she was able to identify what she believed was our gift, each child's gift, and she would tell us what it is, and we'd have mm-hmm. to demonstrate it, and that was our role in the family. And so those happened to be also my two gifts when I built a business. I could make a system out of any chaos and get it in order, like just naturally, like breathing in. And then the second thing that is even far more important if you're going to build a big organization is I could look at someone, size them up quickly, figure mm-hmm. out how I could use them. That sounds bad, always use them, but in other words, what really is great about them and how could I build on it? I got that from my mom. And then on the other side, I had my dad, who was the 11th kid in the family. So he was just into having fun and more fun when he wasn't working his two jobs. And he had a bizarre sense of fun. But what was great about my dad that I brought to my business is I had a fun workplace, and I never, ever let my eye off that ball of making sure I had fun in the workplace, because that's what builds loyalty, obviously. That's what makes people laugh and smile, and they always do their best work when they're happy. It builds teammanship, and it also builds creativity. So I got all of that just by watching how my dad did it with not only our kids, but every kid in the neighborhood. He was like the Pied Piper of the whole neighborhood. And so I had those two role models, and they were really perfectly suited for business, even though neither of my parents were any good at business or never had mm-hmm. never really had that opportunity.
So talking about sort of the mentoring, all the entrepreneurs that you work with, in your experience, what questions do you think entrepreneurs should ask themselves before expanding and going to the next level, whatever that might be for them?
I'll answer two ways. I'll tell you what they should ask, and then I'll tell you what they don't ask.
Right? Mm-hmm, please,
what they should ask is, can I afford this? And then the mm-hmm. other part to that question is, if I spend this money, does it specifically lead to more sales?
Mm-hmm.
And they spend money on a lot of things they just shouldn't be spending money on, especially with the under the limelight of Shark Tank. Everybody gets a big head. I spend most of my time squeezing the heads and reminding them that they're not important, that they're not a big hit, that they're not amazing. No, they just were on Shark Tank, you know? But with each of those entrepreneurs, the first thing they want to spend money on is a publicity agent or a patent, and mm-hmm. I do everything in my power to slow them down, because those are the two things that most young entrepreneurs waste money on. You don't need the patent until you have a hit on your hand. You know, mm-hmm. people often spend most of their savings on getting patents before they even know what the price is, what it's going to cost to manufacture, and more importantly, will anyone buy it? That has to be tested first. And then the second thing, they think that if they have a lot of just the right publicity, that the sales will come, and that's no substitute for a sales call, you know,
right.
or repackaging, or doing something that sells the product. So their head is in the wrong place when it comes to spending. I think the key question is, does it lead to sales? And usually it does not, the misguided entrepreneur who's dying to spend the money, you know. So I slow them down like that and try to teach them about cash flow. And I also, I try, with the emphasis on try, because interestingly enough, every entrepreneur who's taking notes in our Skype calls or in person and doing everything I tell them are typically not going to be a big hit, ironically. And it's not that my advice is bad, but because they're leaning so heavily on looking for the answers elsewhere. Every entrepreneur who listens really intently to what I have to say and then ignores me and does what they want, they're all great entrepreneurs and usually successful. So I've learned to see, oh, they're taking a note. Forget it. They're going to go down. You know? So it's been an interesting learning experience for me, having such a broad range of people. But again, the biggest problem with each of these businesses, which I find on Shark Tank, is 6 months out when they've really misused the funds and they haven't anticipated cash flow. And then the next thing they wind up doing is they're in a muddle having to figure out their finances, not sure where they spend their money. They just feel like they can't get their hands on that, and they waste a lot of time on stuff they're no good at and they shouldn't be spending time on. But I, again, if I could get back to the card, I think that's that other benefit, not the sexy one that I like to talk about, but I think the transparency of the transaction that you get every month, it shows you exactly not only where, of course, you spent the money, but item by item what you spent it on, and it categorizes it for you. Now, I remember spending as a young business person hours upon hours on that stuff when I had to, long after I should have done it. But I think that is something that entrepreneurs, when they're young in business, typically don't know how to do on their own.
Yeah, and kind of along those lines, like if you're just starting out, you're operating at a really, really budgeted, timetable. How should you prioritize? Like, what should you be focused? I mean, you talked about the sales, and putting time into that, but sort of what should they be putting at the top of the priority list?
I think that even before the sales is who's doing what and what are you good at? And I spend a lot of time with everybody. I'm doing that in my seat on Shark Tank, obviously. I'm trying to measure people up and think of, are they in the right roles? Do they have the capacity to succeed?
Right.
But I have to say, assuming now they're my partner, I sit right down with them. That's the first order of business, every single business. And the great majority of my businesses are partnerships, which I really like. It's almost like two for the price of one if they're talented. But with those partnerships predominantly, or with a single person who's a sole operator, I sit down and say, what do you like to do? What are you good at? Where do you spend your time? And I try to get them to get rid of everything they're not good at. I'm just not a believer that you have to be good at everything if you're an entrepreneur, because I think you can hire, and if you don't have the money, you could barter talent for talent. And I've had many of my people do that. You could even recruit people but not pay them if they're part of an adventure. So I think assessing that talent, what your talent is and whether you're spending your time with your talent and what's lacking, and hiring for that. That's the first order of priority when hiring. What are you lacking, and how do you get your hands on what you're lacking that's going to build a successful business? And then after that, it's a question of, do I go to the trade show, okay, or do I spend on social media, hire someone for that? Where are you going to drive sales? And I think you have to assess that carefully and experiment a little in each category initially just to see what's going to get traction. And so and that's just called good spending, and there is no science to it, and a lot of it's experimentation.
Yeah.
But I like to keep a hand on the monitoring quickly, how's it working, because so much money can get wasted.
So definitely lead with strength, no matter where you're starting from.
Always. I mean, all of us do better at things we're naturally good at, don't you think?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
If somebody had wished me to be an accountant, I would have been a dismal failure, or an attorney, because those are my two weaknesses. But ironically, in every one of the businesses I've owned, I have to tell you those are my strengths, because I know that, and I'm hiring powerful people in those positions, really good, because I know how bad I am at it.
But it seems like you're comfortable with taking risks. And I was wondering how you got to that place, or were you always like that?
Oh, I think I was born to taking risks. Remember, I was one in 10 kids. And most importantly, I had nothing to lose and nowhere to go but up It's very easy to take a risk when you have nothing to lose. And if things were not going well, I often said in my head, I could always go back to waitressing. And that wasn't even a joke. I liked waitressing. I loved waitressing. It was a commission-based business. I got to talk to people all day. I have a lot of energy. I could wait a table faster than the next guy. And so I always felt as though in any opportunity or even a hint of an opportunity, I grabbed it because I just was, A, curious, how far can I go? Let's see what's around the corner. And that curiosity is a wonderful thing to get you comfortable with risk. But more importantly, I didn't have fear of falling. I really didn't because I realized what's the worst that happens? I'll be poor again. I was happy when I was poor. I really was. My mother was happy. The kids were happy. We just, you know, it's all about attitude and what you expect. So I never really expected to build a big business and sell it for a lot of money. I never expected any of the riches that came my way. But if I were, you know, lining up what's important in my life, that would not be way up there because I know better because I've been in both places. And it really doesn't make a big difference. And it also can complicate life. I could make you a long list of how money complicates living.
Sure.
So, not that I'm giving it back. I'm going to keep
it. No, definitely not. Yeah.
But I often do not invest in privileged kids on Shark Tank. I have a bias, unfortunately, against them, which could maybe sound unfair, but it's for valid reasons. Because kids that are born with considerable wealth usually are very well educated and have studied how to do business, but they've never had struggle. And I think there's no better Harvard MBA than struggling. If you're going to succeed in business, because you learn how to think on your feet, you learn how to scrap, you learn how to stretch a dollar that's worth a dollar into $5 if you have to. So you automatically, as a poor kid, get a lot of experiences that a richer kid does not get. And so it's a huge advantage. It's a huge advantage, coupled with the fact that they're not growing up under their parents' shadow with expectation of who they should be. And so you're free to fail, which you aren't if you're a child of someone very successful. You're really not free to fail. And so you get that monkey on your back. So I could go on and on. But not by coincidence, but by design, all of my most successful people that I've invested in are really not from affluent backgrounds. And I think it has a lot to do with their success. I really do. I think they came in with a huge advantage into business. And if I get really lucky, like I get somebody who's really messed up as a child and wants to prove something in the world and get even or hate his dad or that kind of, it's like,
that drive.
That's the big kahuna, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm really going to have a success there.
That leads right into my next question about sort of what if, expanding a little bit on what you've learned about finding opportunities when things seem really dire or stuck, but it seems like it's really all about kind of the attitude in those moments.
Well, it's more than attitude. I mean, it's very easy to say, be happy, you know, that little song.
Yeah.
It's very easy to say, keep your chin up. But when you don't see the possibilities in something and all the news is bad news and you see a limited timeline and you don't know how you're going to get through something, attitude is the hardest thing in the world to put in the right place.
Right.
Because how do you just manufacture happiness out of panic and sadness? It's a tall order. But I don't use that, okay? What I use, because I've learned it's really true in business, I don't think I've made it up. I don't think my imagination's that big that I see things that don't happen. But with myself, every time, and I see it again with my entrepreneurs, I could give you many, many stories of the individual entrepreneurs, that every time there was something that went particularly bad, a bad decision or a bad market or the cash was gone or blown on this or you thought you had this and you found out your pants were down, anything in that arena, every single time, that's exactly right after it that I got a flip side of it. I discovered the underbelly of it. And just because I opened my eyes and was willing to work with the underbelly, they became my biggest successes. I could give you many examples, but the shortest one to give because it typifies is me wasting all of my first profit on a great idea, Homes on Tape. Videotapes of all the apartments we had in New York, and you just watch the videotape and choose your apartment. It was a dismal failure, but it wasn't until I lost that $76,000, my entire first profitable year.
Oh.
And I'm like ready to feel sorry for myself.
Yeah.
That's when, believe it or not, my husband told me he played war games on this new government thing called the internet. and my ears were open. I said, what's the internet? I threw them all on. That became Corcoran.com, and I registered all my competitors' URLs and owned them for 2 years. How did that happen? It would have never happened. I wouldn't have paid attention to URLs, to the government thing, if I wasn't coming out of a disaster. So it was like, you know, when you hit it, I actually believe this, too. You know, when you throw a ball against the floor, it bounces high relative to how hard you hit the floor, and it's exactly that way in business. And so that has been over and over and over my MO from the beginning of time, and I see it repeat itself with all my entrepreneurs. So I think rather than thinking you got to keep your attitude up, I think a much better thing is you have to keep your belief up that there's always the flip side. There's always a flip side if you hit that ball hard on that floor. It's just the way it is. And, you know, my best entrepreneurs, without a doubt, are the least intelligent. I think I should have them all take IQ tests. Because they're like, when they get slammed on the head, they're too stupid to lay low. They keep bouncing up and go, hit me again. I mean, that's a low IQ, right? Most smart people say, I think I'll wait till the weather changes, right? I'll just lay down here and watch.
Sense of self-preservation.
But they don't spend any time. Yes. So it's a certain personality trait, without a doubt.
Definitely.
But it's not a high IQ, that I can tell you.
Well, at least maybe more of a social IQ than IQ points themselves. But So since this is going to actually air sort of within the first couple weeks of the new year, I was wondering, how do you feel about, or do you do New Year's resolutions?
I don't ever, no.
Yeah.
I don't do it with my office, no. You know what I do, though, and I'm a big believer in it, I do celebrations on Landmarks. So
nice. We've
had a very successful year this year, and so we've had 4 trips away on Monday through Friday time. We just went and had a ball. You know, we still stayed on top of our emails, but we didn't initiate new projects in those weeks, so the workload was a little less.
Mm-hmm.
And we just went and had a ball. So what I find is when you have a New Year's resolution in business or personally, now maybe it's just me, I'm not so good at them, because I have tried in years past, and I never do it for the last 20 years, forget it. It weighs on you, and you don't really have the ability to change and move quickly with what comes right in front of you. You've already committed to this thing. And then the other thing is you have guilt when you don't do it. Who needs more guilt? And all of us have too much on our plate. You know, way too much. Kids, husband, high maintenance husband, whatever, problems in business. And why are we going to put this neat little list on? It's kind of like pretending that you could make a New Year's resolution a shopping list. It just doesn't work that way. It really doesn't work that way. So I would rather, I think you get much more out of having when you get past a little line and you can clearly see you made it over a certain line or a hump or an objective that you all worked on collectively, immediately go out and celebrate. Go out and celebrate right away. Take a few days off of an island. Just go to a spa for the day. And I do that all the time. And you know what that does? That gets people dreaming of more stuff. And that, in a real way, is an honest, not a New Year's resolution, but it's a resolution to be better. And it always happens that people get better. They get stronger and better. And so I just really believe that's a more practical way to go, even though it might sound a little foofy.
No, I mean, celebrating your wins, it's important, I think.
Oh, my God, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very much so.
So that being said about your stance on resolutions, what are you excited about in the coming year? What are you excited to accomplish?
I have so much I'm working on. I'm working on a TV series that I thought would have been concluded, signed, sealed, and delivered probably a month ago, and it's not. And so I'm determined to make that happen. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just a lot of tripwires along the way, which is anything worthwhile has it. So the TV series, I have a show at CNBC I'm trying to get off the ground. Again, there are tripwires in it, but it will be phenomenal when it happens, and I'm sure it will happen. I'd like to get the handyman in my apartment building to actually do the list of 15 things that's been sitting on my wall because I haven't been home during his 8 to 4 hours to give it to him. I want to start a real estate fund. Actually, it's actually been started. I acquired one big building in a fund, and I'm hoping to expand that aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm hoping to do. I'm hoping to renovate a trailer I bought in L.A. That needs a major renovation, but I'm going to make it a cream puff. And, you know, I just got all the bids in, so I have to conclude on the bid and get the damn thing done. I'm hoping for that. And then I'm hoping for more fun. And not that I don't have fun. I probably vacation 6 to 8 weeks a year, not counting July and August, which I take off. Most people say, well, that's good. But I'm not going to live till I'm 150. And I'm thinking, wait, I need to get like at least a 4-day vacation every third week so I get my money's worth, because I'm not going to retire. I'm going to die with my boots on, that I know. And I'm hoping to do a better job with my daughter, Kate, who has special needs, and she's 13, and she still isn't reading past third grade reading level, no matter what I do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm determined to, what's the next thing? And then the list goes on and on. But they're not New Year resolutions, for sure. Yeah. They're things I'd like to accomplish. And what I have learned in life is you can push like crazy, but there is a time and a place for everything. And in the end, the universe is going to let it happen when it wants to let it happen. My only job is to push like crazy. Keep the pushing up, and then see where it unfolds. So, which is always later than I think it's going to be, every time.
And so last question for you. What does success mean for you now that it didn't when you started?
Success is very simple to me now. It's being engaged in something you enjoy doing, whether it be business or personal. That's success. And having your health.
Yeah.
And your kids have their health. Your husband has his health. That's what I have so far. I have healthy all around me, and I've narrowed it, you know, and I enjoy the heck out of what I do. And I think, what else could you ask for? I'd rather look younger. I'd rather have better skin at this point. I'd rather not wear those phony bras, you know, that you wear. but you could have your list of complaints.
Sure.
I'd rather my husband finally be neat after 35 years of marriage, but he's not going to be. And so I've narrowed my vision on really what is happiness, and it's basically enjoying what you do and having your health. That's about pretty much what it narrows down to in the end. And that's what you get by living a while. You start to realize all the rest is unimportant. I was with my daughter's class mothers the other day, seven mm-hmm. women, all most of them married investment bankers here in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Most of them in their early 30s, and they're going on and on about their husband, they're not working, their husband's boss and the promotion and this out and that. They were stressed. And all I kept saying is, it's not a problem. It's not mm-hmm. a problem. Mm-hmm. They looked at me like I'm the old mom in the crowd, you know, but it's not a problem. It's so silly to waste yourself on all that stuff, right? Just doesn't make any sense. Yeah, it gets in the way. But back to the American Express card, if I could just give it a plug, if you don't mind, because I know you have editing, right? But what is great about the American Express card, it's like two powerhouses that got together, and I don't know how they did the research, but they must have listened long and hard to entrepreneurs to see what they really need, because the way it's structured, it's structured from the entrepreneur. It's almost like if you could have said to entrepreneurs, design yourself something that would really be good for you in business. That's what they came out with. So mm-hmm. I have no doubt that they did a lot of listening before they came out with their benefit package, because it's not fluff. It's really things that the young entrepreneur needs. And I love it that it's for small business, because I like small business so much better than big business. I think they're more deserving for success, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to give that a plug, because I do believe we'll do very, very well because it's real. You know, the benefits are real.
Great. So that was all those questions that I have for you.
All right.
You had great answers, Barbara. Thank you.
Okay. I really appreciate very much you asking, really, and spending the time, too.
That's our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. How Success Happens comes out every week. To catch each episode, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Like, share, and leave us a review so we can always be improving. Go to entrepreneur.com for more episodes of this show and our other great podcasts. That's entrepreneur.com. Thanks.